Welcome to TJ Frog's podcast, where I chat about my knitting, Dorset buttons and creativity in general, as well as sharing my love of Scotland, especially the Highlands and Islands. Hello, I'm Tanya, or aka TJ Frog, or sometimes called the Button Lady. And in my creative business, I predominantly make and promote the traditional craft of Dorset buttons, which dates back to the early 1600s and was a cottage industry that employed many people in Dorset on the south coast of England. Brought up in Dorset, I now live on the Isle of Skye, and wherever you may be in the world, welcome and thank you for joining me for my 7th episode on the craft part 2. I will be covering the weather. September's arrived and autumn is certainly starting to make an appearance, although we still keep getting one or two summer days, which is surprising and really welcome. Making. I went on a workshop for a couple of days. I've made and completed a project, blocked up, sewn up. The starting point shawl is on my needles, albeit I got into a pickle over the order of colours. And I have a new knitting book to get lost into the pages of. Dorset buttons. I did a craft fair at Plockton on the mainland, memorable for an unexpected reason. I've been working on my Dorset button earrings and kits, and I look ahead to the shows that I'll be vending at in September. The local lowdown. I thought I'd give a mention to the Gaelic College near us and the cultural events that take place, and an unexpected, albeit very welcome, surprise I experienced there recently. The final section, the Skye Showcase. This month we're back with Sally at On the Croft on the Minganish Peninsula up on the northwest of the island. If you want to listen to the first part of the interview, you may want to pop over to episode 6 first before carrying on. The weather. Just after I released the last episode, we had a couple of great days here, while London and other places along the south coast of England were feeling a little bit more wintry. And then it hit us. We had our first winds, gusts of up to 40 miles per hour one night. This really is nothing significant here. It's because we've had so little wind over the summer, it just starts to signal a change in the season and maybe possibly an indicator of what might come over the winter. Can you imagine though, 40 mile per hour winds down south? I'm sure it would have made national news. Everything is relative, of course, to where you are. I'm sure over the winter I'll have more to report in this section, depending on what sort of storms come our way to us here in the UK. The bracken. The bracken is dying off. Yes. I dislike bracken immensely. It's prolific. It often chokes other natural ground covering plants. And I know I put a picture out on social media a while back with just this really tiny bunch of bright pink heather trying to still hold its ground, hold its place amongst this dense bracken. It really does take over, and it's so dense sometimes that the pathways are often difficult to find. Sheep ticks also love it, so that's something to really watch out for if you've been walking through the bracken. I was also reading on the Royal Horticultural Society website that bracken should not be eaten by humans or animals. And I know for some of the crofters around here, it's a real physical battle to cut back and ultimately try and eradicate bracken from the land where their livestock graze. I mean, it really is a yearly battle to cut down this bracken, which has these underground roots that just spread. My main dislike of bracken started back in the late 90s, I think it was. One summer, Garrett and I, my husband, and I were walking in the Argyll and Bute region of Scotland, and we found ourselves on a route that was just getting increasingly taken over by bracken, until in the end we were wading our way through this dense thicket. And it got to the point where the bracken was taller than me. And I'm 5'3". Okay, I'm not particularly tall, but once the bracken starts getting taller than you, it's not a nice feeling. And it was at this point on our walk that I had a sense of humour failure. I remember stopping and standing still and calling Garrett back, who was there a little bit ahead of me. And I remember just standing there saying, I had to do things I didn't want to do when I was little. And now I'm grown up, I shouldn't have to do things that I don't want to do. And I don't want to do this. I think it was like a proper grown-up tantrum. I just wasn't enjoying it. And I just couldn't see the point of being out on this walk and not enjoying it. It wasn't even one of those walks where you're challenging yourself physically and afterwards you actually feel quite exhilarated. It was just a trudge. And you know, when you can't actually see anything other than great big green bracken in front of your eyes, no, I want to be looking at the landscape. So I think that's where my sort of love-hate relationship with bracken started. It also probably is another reason why I don't really like walking, as I would call it, off-piste. More and more I find myself preferring to walk along a well-defined path. We are surrounded by bracken here on our little corner of sky. And in my eyes, it acts as an indicator for the change of seasons, which is probably the only thing I particularly love about it. From when those green shoots first appear in the spring to the summer, when it is so green and has such a wide coverage that it often actually affects the sight lines along the sort of single track twisty roads. As summer comes to a close, though, I love it when the brown colour starts to creep in from its roots. This is really great. It's a little bit sad because summer's passing. It's coming to a draw. But I love the fact that the bracken is dying off, that it's going to go back to the ground, that we're going to be able to see along the roads better. This is how I like it. At the moment, it's just starting to turn. And eventually the whole lot will just be this beautiful rusty brown colour, which always looks gorgeous when the sun's on it. And it will eventually shrink right back down to ground level. At the moment, there is a stretch just along where we live that started to brown, but some of the tips have also started to turn that lovely yellow and golden colour. And I do particularly like that colour combination, the green with the yellows and oranges. It's really starting to make me think of autumn. I have got a picture of this in the show notes that Garrett took for me. The heather is continuing to brighten up the moorland and the rowan trees are really starting to look beautiful. And we've got quite a few distributed on the area we live on Skye. They're classic red berries, or fruits, should I say, seem to have just suddenly appeared in real massive clusters. The trees also seem to be looking in really good shape as well. We have one in our garden, not particularly big, but I know when we first moved here, we were told straight away, don't cut that tree down. Don't cut a rowan tree down. It's considered to be bad luck. It's thought they offer protection to your property. Maybe you might know a little bit more about this and you can let me know. I know also people talk about there's lots of berries on the rowan trees and that's an indicator of the conditions that we will experience during winter. But I've also read that it's an indicator of what the previous summer was like. The temperature's noticeably falling early evening here. So even on the good days where it's been pleasantly warm and felt still like summer, come late in the day, there's a real sharpness, a bit of coolness in the air. And it's what I call that in-betweeny weather, where some days you've still got your lightweight cottons and sandals on, and then there's those other odd days where you bring out the woolly tights and the boots. I'm really looking forward to when autumn properly arrives, when we get some snow on the top of the mountains, we get crispy cold days, golden crunchy leaves on the ground, chance to wrap up in my hand knits, put the fire on, drink hot chocolate, and of course do lots of knitting. The nights are really drawing in more and more now, and it's getting darker and darker earlier. I've been caught out a couple of times recently because I've gone out sort of late afternoon, early evening in broad daylight and come back sort of 10, half 10 at night. Of course, it's pitch black. It does feel strange, you know, going out now in broad daylight and leaving a light on. But you do need it for when you come back. So we'll see what the rest of September brings before we change the clocks over in October. And that's when the really big change will happen for us. Baking. First up, Goldfoss. Last time it was ready to be blocked and now it's ready to wear. Yes. I think this is going to be one of those real favourites, go-to items where you might have like a long sleeve t-shirt on and you just want something a little extra to make you feel cosy. So you make it into a little waistcoat or you put it on as a poncho. It's really versatile. I love it. And I'm really happy with my colour choices. Again, some quite autumnal colours against the backdrop of the Air Force blue. I now want to make a Dorset button brooch to wear with it, of course. But I haven't quite yet got the design right in my mind. I want it to be made up of a few rings. So that might take a bit longer to get going. I haven't got a photo of me wearing it yet. And I still haven't got a photo of me wearing my Borough Firth, mainly because it hasn't been cold enough to wear either of these. You probably know that I really don't take selfies, and so I definitely don't take selfies in my knitwear. It's truly not my forte. So it's a case of actually putting the items on and setting up getting somebody else to take a photo of me. As soon as I get round to doing that, I will put them up on social media. I haven't worked on any other whips this month. I did start the starting point shawl. It's a lot of knitting, which I knew it would be, and I'm happy about that. It's the sort of project I love. It's got enough change in stitch and colour to keep the interest going, but it's got sections that are just easy to make good progress on. You can sit and pick it up quite easily, do it while you're maybe watching TV, chatting to friends without getting too lost or going wrong. So I am enjoying it. I think the hardest part, and I talked about it last time, was choosing the order of the five colours. And if I'd have been in on the project from the start, joining it as a mystery, of course I would have followed dark colour here, light colour there, possibly do this here. But once you know the overall design and you've seen all these beautiful shawls that everybody's come up with on Ravelry, it actually starts to play with your head. And give me options and give me choices. I always find it hard to make a decision then. Do I put the gold and pink together? Do I put the grey and pink together? Where do they sit most in the design? How do I want the big stripes to be? I think I've got it where I want it to be. I've certainly started knitting quite a bit. We'll see how it goes. The booster beanie. I realised I haven't sorted out my yarn for yet. And as I'm going to be knitting it during Shetland Wool Week, which starts on the 23rd of September, and is going to be here before I know it, I need to start thinking about this. I'm probably going to go sash diving because I really think I have more than enough in my stash to use for it. What I am getting excited about is seeing the annual for this year's Shetland Wool Week. I have all the others, so I shall have my finger on the button ready to pre-order as soon as it's released so I can add that one to my collection, especially as I'm not going to be at Shetland Wool Week this year. Yesterday, I received my printed copy of A Year of Techniques by Jen and Jim Arnold Culliford. I purchased this earlier in the year and have loved watching the patterns being released throughout the months and seeing all the different projects appear on Ravelry. I am not, though, somebody who is very good at doing knit-alongs or following these pattern releases and jumping on the project each month. I love to see what people are doing and I love the concept of how these are done. With where I'm at though, with what I'm doing with my Dorset buttons and with what knitting projects I've got and everything else I've got on, I'd rather just do these projects at some point in my own time. I've only had a very quick flick through the book and I'm really impressed with what I've seen so far with how it's laid out and particularly with the photographs of the techniques for each project and each section. So I'm really looking forward to delving into this properly at some stage. In the middle of August, I went away on a 2-day break to Cheshire. Just popped down to Cheshire, yeah. I met my mum there who came up from Dorset. So actually that was really good. It was a Debbie Abrahams workshop as part of her Mystery Blanket Club that she runs. This year is Debbie's 10th anniversary of running the Mystery Blanket Club. Debbie is a knitwear designer, and year on year, this Mystery Blanket Club just seems to have got bigger and bigger and bigger. The numbers to it are restricted. Each year is a different project, different yarns, different colours. Usually always have beads and lots of different techniques in. I've done four of the previous blankets, and the first couple I did not long after I started knitting again, and they really helped me learn many new knitting techniques. And the latter two I did helped me to consolidate them. So I found them great projects to do. It's also a very portable project. You can take it around with you. Through doing it, I've met lots of lovely people and made some mystery blanket knitting friends. Also some good workshops too. It's about 3 or 4 years since I did one, and I decided to jump onto the one this year for the 10th anniversary. Although I have to admit, the yarn is still in the bag. I decided early on not to start it because I think it was February when it started. And of course, I was preparing then for Edinburgh Yarn Festival. And then I'd got shows coming up in June and local craft fairs. And I thought, actually, I can't really give the time to this, especially when I'd already identified all those whips, which you know about. It's been very good. It has stayed in the bag. And it will get done one day, but I'm glad that I didn't start it and add it to that pile of whips. I think that would have played heavy on me. The short break gave us a chance to meet up with some other new members of the Mystery Blanket Club, to meet some of my friends I've made along the way, to see Debbie again, and also to have a couple of days with my mum away doing something that we both love. It was a great little break, and as well as people knitting up their squares and Debbie helping people out with techniques, Debbie also gave us a little mini project to do, which was a little purse to hold a notebook. And it had beading, cabling, ferrule, stripes, lots of little different techniques in. And I got the project knitted up in the 2 days, came home, blocked it, and now it's in use. That's what I like when you go to a workshop, having a project that you get to a good state before you get home. Because I have done various workshops, and especially in the early days when I started knitting again, that were never finished and are all in a bag. Maybe that's just another big can of worms I've opened up, or haven't. Maybe the bag should stay closed. Are they whips too? I haven't counted them as whips because I think they're samples. They're like project samples that were helping me with techniques at the time. So I kind of class those differently. That's it on the personal making stuff. Not a lot else has happened. On the Dorset Button front, I can now reveal one of the commissions I've been working on. This was not my idea, although I really wish it had been. So clever. It was the idea of Francis Cameron, who, along with David Mackay, runs a luxury bed and breakfast on the Slate Peninsula here on Skye. And the B&B is called Thistles on Skye. As you can imagine, one of their unique selling points is the theme of thistles. And it runs throughout the whole B&B, from being used on the crockery that you eat your breakfast off to the bedrooms that you relax and sleep in. And I'll put a link to their website on my show notes, and you'll see this theme for yourself and how all the colours they use represent the Scottish landscape. It is beautifully done. And if they didn't live so close to me, I'd go and stay there myself, especially for the breakfast. Have a look at their breakfasts on Instagram posts. Amazing, really artistic. Each of their two bedrooms have a colour theme, and everything from the headboard to the curtains, the lampshades, the trimming on the crisp white bed linen, the logo on the dressing gowns, everything fits into the theme, and it all complements one another as well. Frances' idea was to use the Dorset buttons as the finishing buttons on the duvet covers. How clever is that? Having shown her a selection of hand-dyed yarns and worked up a sample for her, Frances chose three different colours. Each Dorset button is made on a 16mm hollow brass ring and finished off with a handmade shank. And I've done this by making three loops at the back and then blanket stitching around all of them together in one go. it was quite a job getting all of those little shanks a similar size. My little finger was quite sore by the end because that was my sort of little marker to how big the loops should be was the size of my little finger. They will sit over the little white button that you actually get on the duvet covers. The result, I have to say, is a gorgeous set of buttons that they're going to use on this duvet cover that just adds another small, albeit stunning, detail to their rooms. I've put a photo on my show notes that Garant took of them. I've asked him to write a blog on his own website at some point, which I will then share with you, because he had quite a bit of fun playing around just photographing these little buttons. So he's going to write about his experience with that. At some point in the future, I will also put a picture up of them actually in situ in the bedroom at Thistles on Skye. I went to Plockton on the 18th and 19th of August, which I mentioned I was going to be doing. I had a couple of good days there, met some lovely people again. Always love it when someone comes in from Dorset and knows about Dorset buttons. That's always great. The weather was a bit mixed and quite a few people sort of sought shelter in the hall in between the really heavy showers, because there's always tea and cake on the go as well at these craft fairs. So that was good. This Plockton show, though, I shall remember for a slightly different reason. I got stung by a wasp. The last time I got stung by a wasp, I was about 12, so I'd forgotten what it felt like. On the first day, we'd had quite a few wasps in the hall, and we have doors open either end. And as I say, the weather was wet, it was still warm, and I think they're getting to that sort of sleepy stage. And there was a few of them flying around, which I was aware of, but they certainly weren't pestering me. On the second day, I hadn't even seen any at all. And it was nearing the end of the day when I was chatting to one of the other vendors, I felt an itch on my back. I put my hand over to scratch it and felt this sharp stab in my finger. I was wearing a jumper that I'd knitted. I've worn it and washed it loads of times. Initially, I was thinking to myself, have I left a needle in here? Have I left a pin in here? Which I knew was totally illogical because, as I say, I've worn it and washed it. So I was thinking, what's just stabbed me? That was really painful. So I asked my friend to look to see if she could see anything on the neckline of my jumper. There was the offender, the wasp. Luckily, thank you, Alison, she got it off without stinging herself or me again. And at that point, the throbbing and the stabbing pain really started to make itself known in my finger. I have to say thank you to all my fellow vendors who really jumped into action. They were just brilliant. Louise, who you may remember I interviewed early on in my podcast, Louise Lulu Designs, who does the Harris Tweed bags, bless her, offered to go down the shop to buy something to relieve the pain. A couple of people mentioned vinegar, and I remember as a child when a couple of my friends got stung that their parents would do this, put vinegar on their wasp sting. I've since read there doesn't seem to be any scientific proof behind it, and there's other things that people use such as lemon, garlic, salt, baking soda. Some people seem to think that it's more the psychological effect of rubbing something in that actually helps to reduce the pain. I don't know. What's your experience? I know ice helps to reduce swelling. And of course, there's pharmacy remedies that we can go and get. Surprise, surprise, nobody at the craft fair had a bottle of vinegar in their back pocket. And we searched the kitchen, but we couldn't find any there either. I was running my finger under the cold tap just to try and relieve the pain a little bit, when one of the vendors, who's a crofter, jumped in to say that her beetroot and turnip chutney was freshly made and had vinegar in it. The next thing, she'd got a big dollop of this chutney and there it was on my finger, and we wrapped it up in tissue and I left it on for the last 20 minutes of the show. Who would have thought beetroot and turnip chutney could do the trick for me? There's a first for everything, as they say. I can't believe it, how quickly the throbbing and the stabbing pain subsided. It really was incredible. I'm not sure precisely what was in that chutney that did the trick, whether it was the vinegar, whether it was the psychological thought of something being applied to my finger. Who knows? I don't really care. It really helped to relieve the pain. Apart from that sort of small little welt that you get left at the point of entry of the sting, I didn't have anything. It was just very strange. And the swelling that had started to appear very quickly afterwards as well just went down. That was my Plockton craft fair. Looking ahead to September, this is a really exciting month and hopefully no more wasps included. Two new show outings for me coming up. First up, Perth Festival of Yarn on Sunday the 10th of September. I'm really looking forward to this show. I wasn't there last year because I was in Shetland, although I understand it was a very good show, very well attended, lovely selection of vendors. And this year it seems to have grown even bigger. It's gone to a new venue. There's extra events around the central marketplace. They're having a social meetup the night before. There's workshops. Di Gilpin is going to be doing a keynote lecture, which I know will be brilliant to listen to. I've been to a couple of Di's lectures and they are very moving, very interesting, very thought-provoking. There's a podcast lounge which has meetups and demonstrations, a knit and natter area, and at the last time I looked, there's just under 70 vendors in the marketplace, which for a one-day event from 11 to 5 is great. There's a podcast meetup from 12 till 1 p.m. I'm on my own for this show, though. Garrett's not there to help me this time. So if you do want to come and say hello to me, it's probably better to come and say hello at the stand because I'm not likely to make it into the lounge. I'm at table 54. In between Ginger Twist Studio from Edinburgh and Knit Mastery. If you're on the lookout for me, that's where you'll find me. There's a few new vendors to me, so I'm hoping that before the main doors open, I get a chance to have a quick look round and maybe a bit of a shop myself. I think the 6 hours that this event is open for, or the marketplace is open for, it's going to be quite a hive of activity. So looking forward to it. After that, I'm straight back home. That night, a bit of a long journey from Perth, a few hours, but it'll be worth it because I then only have a week and a half at home before I travel south down into Yorkshire for Yarndale, which is on Saturday the 23rd and Sunday the 24th of September. Another new and very big show to me. I think the days at home in between the two shows is going to be spent making sure I've got all those extra bits and pieces that you need in your toolkit to set up in an auction mark pen rather than a table in a hall. Yes, you have a table in your pen or probably two tables. It's quite different though, because you're dressing the pen, you're dressing the railings at the side, you're thinking about a sign to put up so that people can orientate themselves within the mark to find you. You've got a lot more space to use ultimately. So there are a few more things to think about. The layout for Yarndale is now available on the exhibitors list page and you can download this. I'm in pen 113 on aisle H and I'm next door to Pearl and Jane. And on the other side, I have Sue Stratford Designs. If you're coming along again, come and say hello to me. Two great experiences in September and hopefully I'll have lots to tell you next month about them. If you're not going, I can tell you that there's a little mini shop update happening on Monday the 4th of September, as I've been restocking my Dorset Button earrings, which I now have in 9 different colourways. If you fancy wearing an extra little bit of wool to complement your hand-knitted garments or shawls, then these are a really lovely finishing touch and they also make a beautiful gift for somebody too. On to Sky Focus, starting with the local lowdown. From time to time, I'm a front house volunteer for Shell, an arts promoter who bring a variety of cultural events to the Slate Peninsula. These events include many different acts, both traditional and contemporary. Over the years, we've enjoyed contrasting variety of cultural events, from fiddle festivals to Gaelic singing, live theatre, film. Shell stands for Sky Events for All, and also means look or see in Gaelic. All highly appropriate for cultural events that are held at the Gaelic College, Sabham or Ostaig, here on Slate. They are really popular throughout the year, and during July and August in particular, they put on what's called the Sky Festival. It's an emphasis on Scottish traditional music, with various music, dance, theatre, literature performances, and there's also lots of extra activities going on around the peninsula, such as exhibitions, charity events, house music events. And it's a fantastic programme. And literally, there's nigh on something happening every day, if not two or three events a day. And it goes on over 2 months, and it's popular with both locals and also visitors as well. I think, you know, quite often when you're on holiday in the evening, you might go out for a meal, but what else is there around locally that you can go and do? And this is a lovely way to enjoy both Scottish traditional music and the cultural arts. And Duncan, who is at the head of the Shell Group, fantastic. I really don't know how he manages to do what he does. He is a tremendous advocate for everything that he puts together and the variety of acts that he brings to the island. On the 22nd of August, we had a sellout event which was featuring four well-known Scottish traditional musicians. And I happened to be on duty that night and was assigned to the table for selling raffle tickets. Can you imagine my immense surprise, to say the least, when next to me was the Gaelic Gins tasting table? Yes, the exact Gaelic gin that I mentioned to you last month. It made my night. It was popular with a lot of the people who were visiting too, as you can probably imagine. They had all these little taster pots out with an array of different garnishes, lemon, lime, orange, blackberries. Oh, and they asked people to try it and to put their feedback up on the flip chart. And I think they got a lot of feedback, which was fantastic for them. A tiny, weeny little bit may have touched my lips. And what did it taste of? What was it like? I'm not telling. It's a secret for now. I'm not giving anything away at the moment. I was fortunate enough to meet Leah, who's been getting all those essential ingredients together to make this gin taste as it does. And I also met Chrissy, the marketing manager. There's much work going on behind the scenes at the moment to add those finishing touches and to bring it to the marketplace. That's why I'm not giving anything away about the taste at the moment. Although I'm sure it will be one that you'd all love to try. In due course, I hope to bring you news of the official launch. So keep listening, gin lovers. Something else happened this week to Garen and I, which was a complete surprise. And it just encompasses one of the many special things about living on Skye and living on an island in general. Public transport is very limited. Fuel is expensive on islands. So hitchhiking is a common practice by both locals and visitors. If you listen to Faye of the Crochet Circle podcast, then you will have heard her talking about an experience they had giving such a lift to a local character on their recent trip to Harris. I won't spoil the story as it's Faye's to tell, and she tells it very well. I was in tears of laughter listening to it. If you've not heard it and you want to listen, pop over to episode 19 of the Crochet Circle podcast. What happened to Garen and I is quite a different story. It will stay with me, though, for a very long time. A few days ago, we picked up a couple of young girls, a Canadian and a German. After general chit-chat in the car, talking about how we all came to be on Skye, what work we were doing here, places they'd visited, they asked if they could sing us a song to thank us for the lift. Out came a ukulele from one of the rucksacks, and they sat in the back of our car singing a duet in beautiful, beautiful harmony. As we were driving along the main A road on our peninsula, surrounded by all the gorgeous Skye, Scottish mainland scenery, the sun was shining in. It was magic, priceless. It really was surreal. And to be honest, I felt quite emotional. It just seemed such a carefree, happy moment. That's it. A bit of local news and a little bit about life on Skye. Finally, today's interview, the Skye Showcase. We're back with Sally from On the Croft on the Minganish Peninsula here on Skye. In episode 6, we had a short intro to Sally, how she came to be on Skye. We talked about her croft and her Jacob's sheep and some of the crafts that she does and her many talents. In the second part of the interview, I ask her to introduce us to the many different items she makes and sells in her shop. We learn about a link between Harris Tweed and where she lives. We talk about those fleeces from her sheep, what happens to them. We touch on views and visiting Skye in the winter. and also the woodwork that her husband is now producing. So let's pick up the conversation from where we left off last time. About your poncho, because this is a new one on me. This is new today. Well, not new today, but new for me today. So tell us about your ponchos.
I'm using Harris Tweed as a design for my ponchos, as a fabric for my ponchos. I felt there was a need for something beyond the cushions and the teddy bears that I make in Harris Tweed. And I thought it'd be nice to use the tweed for something larger, and I thought garments. And I had this thought of these ponchos, and they've really worked very, very well. I've designed them myself. They have wacky buttons on them that seem to be really popular. I made sure they were fully lined so they all hang down nicely. And when I realised that actually people like these as well, I've had to register the design because it is unusual.
Yes.
So, and there we are. And people come in and try them on, love them, and take them away again.
Yep, they are beautiful. They just hang so well. And you've got one up modelling there as well. What about the fabric?
The Harris Tweed, which obviously is made on Harris Lewis, is made with Scottish wool, and it can only be called Harris Tweed if it has been hand woven in crofters' homes. Yes. So there's nothing manufactured about the cloth. And the connection with Harris Tweed and the Minglish Peninsula is that nearly 100 years ago, people came over from Harris and Lewis and were resettled on the Minglish Peninsula. They were given small crofts, and they were there, and the croft, as we said before, was there so they could live off the land. But coming from Harris and Lewis, they were Harris Tweed weavers. So they brought their looms and they brought their spinning wheels over, and they set up their own business over here. But of course, because it wasn't in Harris, they had to call it something else. So they called it Portnaskye Tweed.
Right.
In the 1930s, I think it was 1933, the Duke and Duchess of York came over, later to become Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, and George VI.
Right.
And they visited the area, and they were given lengths of tweed at that time. Unfortunately, in the 80s, the industry over here died out completely, which it almost did on Harris at about the same time, except, as we know, the Harris Tweed is a different story altogether.
Yes,
The old warehouses were bought up and the product was promoted into a worldwide brand. Until today, you get the most amazing colours and weaves.
Oh, no.
That's fantastic.
Have you been to Harris?
No, I haven't.
No, you
gotta
go.
I daren't.
Well, true.
I couldn't buy it. It's bad enough being online, being able to buy it online.
It probably was more than a couple of years ago. At the Village Hall, you did a community presentation, an exhibition, didn't you?
About we did the Lamb to Loom exhibition approximately
Where does time go?
displaying the entire history of this peninsula over the past 100 years, which was absolutely fascinating.
Yes.
And I do believe that the Lamb to Loom exhibition might be running again next year in 2018.
Ah, that would be good.
So we'll all look forward to that again.
Yeah. No, I remember coming along. I just hadn't realised it was so long ago. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. What about your wool then?
That's where it all started.
And I'm just sat here by the greens, as you all know. I love green.
Yes, it's all my own Jacob wool in here. Some of it is hand spun, but because hand spinning takes so long, it's not something I can do. I can't process all the wool.
No.
So I process some of it. Others I send off to the mill to get spun for me, and then it all comes back and I hand dye it all. There's nothing standard about my dyeing either. I use acid dyes. I don't use natural dyes. I prefer the acid dyes. You get a more permanent colour.
Yes.
Stronger colours.
Yes, for
and
sure.
And that just suits me.
Yes, yeah,
I use saucepans, my best stainless steel saucepans, on my hob, whack them in, and I think, oh no, I don't like that colour, just add a bit of this and add a bit of that, so don't talk to me about dye lots.
Okay.
Because what you see is what you get.
Yeah. So it's not like you would come and buy enough for doing a sweater. You're more sort of buying your one-off skeins for making a shawl
or a scarf.
Something. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Was it last year I had some of your...
You had some of the natural Jacob.
Yes, because it was it Gracie Junior?
That's it, yes.
And I made the necklace out of
it. That's right,
yeah.
Well, she's more brown than white. So what I did with her, and I'm doing actually with her again this year, is spinning her fleece in the grease. So I'm not washing it, I'm not carding it, I'm just taking it as it's been sheared and just spinning straight off.
Right.
And I must be doing something right, because every time I put another couple of skeins that I finished out here, it sells again.
Ah.
So it certainly is unusual, yes. One-off type things. I never know how the mix is going to go. And I think the randomness of it just appeals.
Yeah.
But fortunately, Gracie was the mum, is the mum. Gracie Jr. is still bouncing about like a good one. And Gracie's had another lamb this year. I couldn't call her Gracie Jr. Jr. Not being very good on names.
So Gracie we Jr. Her, twice.
She's called JJ.
Oh.
Salted. But she's got a beautiful fleece as well. So hopefully I can keep turning out the hand-spun greasy stuff. I do wash it, by the way, before it comes in here, so it's nice and clean again.
Yeah.
But a lot of the other fleece needs to be sorted, split apart, and then I will spin the white and spin the brown. Although there's more than one colour in the browns. There's so many shades in the browns of a Jacob.
Yeah.
In between each sheep and on the sheep itself.
Yes.
That I can split out all the colours, and I've got all the wonderful different colours to work with then.
Yeah.
Shades of.
Yeah.
Hence my felted pictures.
Okay, so we move on. There's one wall, and Sally has this lovely display of felted pictures, and they really are beautiful.
Thank you.
Again. And you've done a lot of coloured ones in the past, haven't you?
Yes.
Maybe with one or two naturals. But when I've come in today, you've got quite a display of the naturals on some of the scenes around Skye. And I've not seen those before. And they're very, very clever. I really, again, like you say, the shades that you get from the different fleece, from the same animal, just shows off so well what you're trying to portray.
They almost look like sepia photographs at a distance.
True.
But they're needle felted.
Yes.
I'm not averse to using other fibres where necessary. Silk works beautifully well for water. And also, I have a friend up the road who has some Soe sheep, which are an ancient breed from St Kilda. Their fleece roos off or drops off every year. It doesn't need shearing. It comes off of its own.
Yes.
It's very short on the whole and very, very soft. But it has the most wonderful tones in it. So I can use that in my pictures as well. So not only have I got the Jacob sheep, I've got the Soe sheep. And I say the silk for the water. And sometimes I need colour. And I think, right, that's it. And I'll just go to all my coloured merinos that I have bought in and think, right, some of this and some of that. Though I have to say, I'm not very good with colour, which is probably why I prefer drawing and and natural coloured pictures, because me trying to put colours together has never been my best talent in the world.
I'm sure you're so underestimating your ability. Yeah, I really do particularly love those natural ones.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They work well, don't they?
Mm, they do. And I think you're right. Well, I hadn't thought about it, but I know you spoke earlier about being sepia, but really stepping back from it, seeing it from that distance.
It's almost impressionistic in a way.
Yes.
You know, I'm working very close, so obviously I'm needle felting them down. And you think you're seeing one thing, but what I have to do frequently is step away and look at it from a few feet, a few yards away.
Yeah.
And then suddenly something really smacks you in the face. Oh, goodness, no, that can't work. Or, oh, that works well. I didn't realise I was doing that.
Yeah.
Which is why it doesn't matter, you know, I will do the same scene again, but it will never be the same as the last one.
No.
Even if I want it to be, it just doesn't happen that way. It's quite random.
Yeah.
And once again, unique.
Yes, and the materials as they are on that day as well.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
So what about your knitting as well?
Yes, I love knitting. I will also have more than one project on the go.
Oh, yes. You got to.
So I can sit in the evening. Sometimes if I want to watch television or listen to something in the background, I've got something nice and simple, like a hat or a scarf. I can just sit and knit without looking and thinking about it. My real passion is lace knitting.
Right.
Shawls and what have you. And believe me, you cannot sit and think of anything else other than your stitches. You've got to watch your needles all the time.
It's not TV knitting, is it?
No. So it's more of a winter project, I have to say. I can't keep stopping and starting. Excuse me, do you mind waiting till I finish this row? 394 stitches later.
You'd need to have a lot of lifelines in, wouldn't you? In case
yes, absolutely.
You dropped a stitch.
Absolutely.
Oh, dear. You've got a couple of your lace shawls on display yes. here, haven't
yes.
you?
Yes, one of them is a wedding ring shawl from Shetland. It's hand spun from my Jacob sheep.
Right.
It's cobweb weight. And yes, it will go through my wedding ring. I have checked it.
Wow.
And of course.
And you've hand spun that to that.
Yes. Hand spun and then knitted it, obviously.
Wow.
The tradition is that it's called a wedding ring shawl, but the girls would wear the shawl on their wedding day.
Yes.
Instead of the veils that are common today, obviously. And then put it away ready for when the children came along, and then they would be used for their christenings.
Yes.
And then passed down in the family.
Yes.
Which I think is a lovely thought, if yes. nothing else.
Definitely. And I really admire Shetland lace, well, and yes. lace shawls, totally. I've only ever knitted one.
You're hiding your talents behind a bushel then.
Oh, no, I think it is because, as you say, you've just got to totally concentrate on it. You've just really, I found it hard. It took a lot of knit a bit, frog a bit, knit a bit, frog a bit. But I finished it, and maybe I'll do another one day. But last year I went to Shetland Wool Week, and there was an exhibition being run the first weekend up at a place, I'm going to call it Ollabri. Hopefully any Shetlanders will excuse me if I've got the pronunciation wrong on that. And it was an exhibition put together by the local people of these Shetland lace shawls that, as you say, had been passed down through generations of family. And originally the exhibition was only supposed to be on the weekend, and it was so popular they extended it, and I was so lucky because I was able then to go to it and to look at these shawls, look at the work in them, to read some of the family stories, to see photographs of different generations wearing them,
all to life.
But
those Shetland shawls are just so intricate.
Oh, they are.
I don't think I could do one of those. There are limits to my capabilities, I think.
They are very intricate. Yes, yeah,
wonderful things. Yeah, wonderful things, yes.
Beautiful.
But the most intricate thing I've knitted has probably been the Eriske jumper at the front there, which once again is hand spun.
Right.
It's a Ganksy jumper,
yes.
So a fisherman's jumper.
Yes.
I found the pattern for the Eriske jumper in a book. I can't remember which one now. I know it was Alice Starmore does them, but it wasn't her, it was somebody else. And there's various patterns on there, like Tree of Life and anchors and all sorts of. Now that took me a long time because I got fed up doing it.
Yeah, some projects are like that, aren't they?
Yes. Do something else.
So as you can see, I said originally that Sally's very talented and does a lot of crafts, and we've talked now about not only is she doing the knitting and the felting and the Harris tweed, but actually taking that fleece from her own flock that you can see from the car park of her shop, looking over the croft and then down to the lock, and sorting it, washing it, carding it, spinning it to the thickness that you want for the project that you want. It's just, I think it's amazing.
Hence the name for the shop, really,
yes,
On the Croft.
On the Croft.
Because that's where the sheep are, on the Croft, and that's where some of my stuff in here originates from.
Yes. We've talked about your felted pictures, and you also have some needle felting kits.
Yeah, 3D animals,
3D animals.
Rather than the pictures, yes. So I think this was just another one of those craft ideas that we've all tried, and I thought, oh, that looks quite good. So I do 3D animals. There's a rabbit and a squirrel, and of course the Highland Coo, ever popular.
Yes.
Not my favourite occupation, but I do the kits for them so that you can, you know, people can make their own. And I think a lot of customers like that idea. It gives them something to do while they're up here.
Definitely.
Or maybe as a gift
yes.
for others. You know, it's all there. They just buy one pack and you've got the mats and the needles and the wool and full instructions.
Yes.
They're good fun.
So if you are here and you do visit, it's not just about necessarily buying a finished item. There's something that people can do if they're a maker and crafter themselves. Yes. And want to have a have a go.
Obviously, I get quite a lot of crafters coming in, having a look at what I'm doing in comparing to what they're doing, which is fine.
Yes.
And others think, oh, that's a new idea. Let's try one of these felting kits. I've not tried this before. Hopefully there's something for quite a few people to have a look at.
Yes, yeah. I think they are a lot of fun. And as you mentioned, the Highland Coo, ever popular here.
Yes. Well, they're such adorable animals, aren't they? Even now, I'm driving around seeing them and I think, oh, don't they look lovely?
They are lovely. Potentially a bit of a road hazard at times when people see them and suddenly want to stop and take a photo. So again, you talked there about another creative idea. And I think that's often one of the things, isn't it, with creative people. We do have so many ideas and it's like how we channel them. And when we say enough's enough, or we think of something, yes, how can I make this work? How can I add this in to what I'm doing already?
Or... Absolutely. I don't think creativity ever stops.
No.
I know that there's quite a lot of crafts that I have tried and I have thoroughly enjoyed, without a doubt. But then I have to say to myself, stop. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I get so snowed under with all these different projects and I don't know if I'm coming or going and nothing ever gets completed.
Yeah.
So you have to stop every now and again.
Yes.
Having said that, as the shop quietens down into the winter months, because I do stay open all winter, but it is a lot quieter, obviously.
Yes.
It gives me the time to stop and think.
Yes.
And that's when I come up with these sometimes completely ludicrous ideas that are never going to work, but I've got to try them anyway.
And you've got a bit more time, presumably,
absolutely.
Then to
and
play.
Then suddenly something where I think, well, maybe I could do this. I'd like to try that. And it works, and it works extremely well, and it's something I can put then into the mainstream for the shop for the following year.
Yes.
It's the time to stop and think that you need. The old cogs don't turn over quite as rapidly as they used to, I'm sure.
Well, we're not that far off that winter time. You'll be getting your thinking cap on again.
Oh, don't wish it here just yet.
No, I know. Although going by today's weather, it was,
Yes.
So as makers, you know, one of the things when your business is very much around what you make, there is often that supply and demand issue, isn't there? Can we make fast enough? Can we make enough? Can we make the quality and standard that we want it to be?
Oh, absolutely. Quality and standard is an absolute must.
Yes. Yeah.
However, quantity is another matter.
Exactly. Yeah.
You can drive yourself into the ground and then you start losing your standards. So I think you just have to stop, take a breath and say, no, if it's not there, I can't sell it, but fine, it will be there when I have managed to do it the way I want to do
it. Yes, yes. So it might be in 3 months I can do it for you further down the line.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's like my felted pictures. Now, I do the landscapes, obviously, but I also do dogs. I started with my own dog.
Right.
He's a black lab. Who will greet you when you walk into the shop by barking ferociously outside. But that's about the only thing that's ferocious about him. So I started doing that because he was all black. He was laying on the couch indoors, as Labradors do, one evening. And I thought, look at the lovely shine in that. And there were silvers and greys and blues and so many colours within the black of the head.
Right.
I thought, I've got to try and capture that somehow. So this was one of my winter projects. What can I do now? So I did that. And it took me a long, long time.
I bet.
But I'm so delighted with the final outcome. And I have done a few more since then. I work from photographs.
Yes.
Rather than the live animal. So we've got to have a nice expression on this dog's face and we've got to have the light and the shade.
Yes.
And then I just go for it.
Yes.
So I have done a few and they've been most welcome because I do them for owners. You can't do dogs for the shop because every dog is different.
Yeah. So that's more like a personal commission for people.
Yes, yes. Yes. But that's another winter job that takes time.
Yes.
It can't just be knocked off because, you know, you can't have a dog that looks like a puppet. It's got to look like the dog.
Yes. Yeah, you're not doing a sort of, what's the word? I can't think of, a sort of abstract style of it. You're doing a...
I'm trying to be as lifelike as possible.
Yeah, trying to capture
the character of the that particular pet.
Yes.
Not anybody else's dog. It's got to look like their dog.
Yes.
Into the felt.
Yeah.
I get there eventually.
And I love the way you just described about the different colours in your dog's head. That's really lovely.
That's normally what starts off the creative process for me. Yeah. Something strikes me.
Yes.
Wow, that's wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, on the croft, I also have peacocks.
Oh, I didn't know.
Oh, yes. Well, they're very quiet now because he's just lost all his tail feathers again.
Oh.
I have a couple of others, one who's sitting on some eggs at the moment, but it's all nice and quiet out there.
Because they do make a lot of noise.
Only during the breeding season, and only if there's traffic on the road.
Oh.
Or any strange noise between about March and July, and then everybody knows they're there. And then they'll go off walkabouts onto the neighbours' properties, but, you know, hey-ho. But I have all these tail feathers. And I keep thinking to myself, I'm sure I can do something with those.
Yes.
And I'm still ticking over because I want to do some sort of hanging for the front window.
Right.
But that'll come in time as well, I'm sure.
Yeah. The idea is still being cogitated on. And,
yes.
Yeah. So what other animals have you got? Have you got any other animals?
Oh, we've got the chickens, of course, and a couple of ducks.
Yeah, I love ducks.
And that's it now. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's all. And obviously the dog.
Yes.
That's more than enough.
You overlook the lock here.
Lock Harport, so yes.
Lock Harport. And you have some water life.
Oh, well, yes, yesterday, for the first time since I've been up here, we often see a lot of movement in the lock, obviously. And I look out and I've got the binoculars out and then, oh, it's just a seagull sitting on the water making a mess. Or, oh, that might be a shoal of mackerel up. But you can just see the ripples underneath, but you can't see much. But yesterday I looked out and there was a pod of dolphins breaching and splashing about. There must have been 15 or 20 of them. Such a thrill to see.
Yes.
Right in front of me. I was in the kitchen just about to cook dinner and there they are. Well,
priceless.
What can you say? I mean, I can't be blasé about any sort of wildlife, but I've certainly seen more sea eagles up in the air going up and down the croft than I have dolphins in the lock. So that was a real special for me.
Oh, that's lovely. And it's those things, isn't it? People say to me, oh, you know, they come to my house and they're like, oh, wow, the view. And then they're sort of like, oh, I bet you get blasé about it. I bet you get tired of it. But I'm like, no.
No, how can you? No.
I mean, it's a huge distraction for me. Probably, well, not so much for you, because you're sort of, maybe when you're in your shop, you're sort of looking the other way. But when you're at home.
Absolutely, yes.
It's... I sometimes have to stop myself looking out the window, and I don't think I will ever tire or ever get fed up of...
Don't stop yourself. Why? That's part of the joy of being
up
here.
Not true, yes. It's only at times when I'm like, yeah, well, maybe I've stopped for too long. But I agree, that is the joy. It is just taking that time out and allowing yourself to have that time to just stare out the window.
Absolutely.
Because something's caught your eye.
Every time is different. The light is different, the weather is different. Yes, we get a lot of wind and rain, but it's so exciting to see that.
Yes.
Travelling up the lock, you can see the rain coming.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, there's a novelty. Not.
Yeah.
But no, the different lights, different times of year.
Birds.
Yeah, the birds and just the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, we're lucky that here that we can see the coolings as well. So
I was just
going to
bring that up. Yes. Yeah, you've got a lovely spot here, as there are many lovely spots on Skye. But
absolutely,
yes, you've got.
Absolutely. You can't not have a lovely spot if you live on Skye.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned that you're open all year round.
Yes.
So what are your opening times if people do come here on Skye? Want to visit you?
Well, obviously during the summer months we tend to be open from 9 till 5:30.
Right.
And winter months it's more likely to be 10 till 4.
Yeah.
There's no point opening after dark, really. But I'm here most of the time.
Yeah.
Obviously there are occasions when
we
have to go off and do something else.
Yes.
But not very many.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's lovely. And every week we will have somebody in, even in the depths of winter.
Yes.
Because visitors love to come up to Skye all year round.
Yeah.
And they do.
Yeah.
Yes, not so many, but there's still people around and I love to see them.
Yeah, I love the winter. I love the winter. For me, it's a little bit quieter on the roads and I like sort of being able to drive around and just look at how the light is on some of the different landscapes, because I think in the summer the light can be quite harsh sometimes, whereas in the winter the light's just different. I can't explain
the sun
it very
is a lot
well.
Lower, so what you tend to get is longer shadows.
Yes.
Cast in, so
you
forever seeing something different.
Yes.
I know, and I can look at the Coolins, and you know what they look like from here. But then all of a sudden, the sun comes round in the summer. We're on the north side of the Coolins, so we see the north side of the Coolins. So it doesn't get much sun in the winter. But in the summer, as the sun comes right round and is straight on the Coolins, you think, oh, that's not one ridge. That's a whole load of ridges all built differently. And
you see it in a different way.
Yeah. Even the hills on the other side of the loch. You see different things at different times of year because of the way the sun is casting its light down on that land.
Yes, yeah.
It's wonderful.
Definitely, I agree. And I get really excited, which is very childish, seeing that first bit of snow in the winter on the mountains.
Yes.
I just really love it. I get so excited by that.
Because often with the snow, you get the cold, clear weather.
Yes.
So you get the blue skies and the sunshine.
Yes.
And it just looks stunning.
Yeah, I love those days as well.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, really cold and crisp.
Yes.
Yeah.
No midges.
No midges. Oh, well, you see, where I live, because I live on a headland, we don't get any midges anyway.
Now you're boasting.
I know, some of my friends are not very happy because literally a couple of miles down the road, the midges are there, but because we have just always got this permanent breeze, we can sit out in the garden anytime. You just don't get affected, don't need to wear a midge net. And I know we are really, really fortunate. You know, I almost forget sometimes when I go to other people's houses or go to other places. And at the moment, I've got a few midge bites because I've just completely forgotten that.
Tea tree oil you need to carry over you.
Definitely. One of the things you touched on very slightly was about your husband and being the butcher, and he's now wood turner.
Yes.
Yeah, so tell us how that all came about and what he makes.
Well, the same sort of idea, I suppose, wondering what he could do with himself. And you dip in and out of various hobbies and everything's fine. But then he saw some wood turn, he thought, I'd like to do that. I'm sure I could. So, as you do, you give it a go. And he's extremely talented. I'm fascinated how he can just take a lump of wood, or a blank as they're called, and turn it into something beautiful, bring out beauty of the grain in the wood and the shape. And it's fascinating, it really is. We use British woods, local when we can, but obviously these things need to be seasoned, so just usually grabbing an old log from somewhere and turning it ends up in disaster because it splits or warps. Having said that, he does natural edge bowls, which are from our own trees on the croft. We have previously cut down and they've been lying around outside for 2 or 3 years, so they're well seasoned, and he does some beautiful turning on those. We've been fortunate enough to get some wood from Talisker. So that's Talisker Bay, not the distillery. So we have a little bit of sycamore still that's got some beautiful spalting into it, which is, spalting's a natural process when the tree has been cut and is lying on the ground. The fungi gets into the veins in the wood.
Okay.
And colours the wood.
Right, I didn't realise that was the name for it.
Yeah, so you end up with these beautiful markings. Spalted beech is most definitely the most popular, but we have to buy that in. But it is nevertheless a British wood. Yew we use, and cherry. Somebody gives us various bits. Oh, I've got this big bit of wood, do you want to try it? Of course. And hey presto, before I know it, he's knocked me up another bowl.
Yeah.
But no, they're wonderful. He even makes spurtles. Everybody who comes in the shop and asks, what is a spurtle? It's for stirring your porridge and you don't break the oats. And he also makes something called Nosty Pinnies, which are wool winders.
Yes, and they're just by me here on the shelf. Beautifully presented in some lovely Harris Tweed.
Harris Tweed case, yes.
That is beautiful. I mean, that is just a lovely gift for somebody. You know, if you've got a friend or somebody who...
You've got a friend who's got loads of wool, buys loads of skeins of wool, and you want to buy her something for her wool, but
yes,
it's no point buying her any more wool. Sometimes a wool winder is a great idea.
That's beautiful.
You can wind your skein onto this wool winder, and you end up with a lovely centre feed ball of wool. It means when you're sitting there knitting with a ball of wool on the floor, it's fed from the centre, so you're pulling it out from the centre, so the ball of wool is not skitting all over the floor every time you need a bit more wool.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I love the fact you've got them, again, made on the croft.
Yes.
And how you've then packaged them up. That's a really, really lovely idea.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, you see, every time I keep looking around, there's another new thing or something I've not spotted before. I might have to go shopping now, folks. stock up on a few presents for people and some wool. What I will do is I will take some pictures of Sally's shop, and we will also put a link on my show notes to her Facebook page. So if you want to follow her and catch up with what's happening on the croft, or her pictures of scenery and anything else that she puts on there, then you'll be able to do that. Anything else in the pipeline, or is it all secret at the moment?
Nothing secret, because there's nothing actually in the pipeline. Definite. Although I have to say, I have been trying. Yes, I was thinking about bags, kilts, bags, but these ideas pop in and out my head.
Okay.
There's nothing else very concrete at the moment.
Right.
Or maybe I should just sit and happily spin and knit.
We've got a few more weeks left of the sort of main tourist season, haven't we?
Yes.
So maybe till about the end of October now? Is
something
sort of busiest,
like that, yes.
Period.
And then it starts slowing down slightly.
Yeah.
But there's still plenty of people come to visit, and the sky is still open for everybody.
Yes.
All year now.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah. Wonderful. And that's a really good message, actually, for me to put out. You know, Skye's, it's not just a summer destination. There is so much to see and do here in the winter, and there are a lot more places staying open in the winter now,
yes,
aren't there?
Yes, absolutely. So, I know the old inn stays open all year.
Yeah.
That's the pub in the village, a wonderful old
yes.
pub. Yes. with accommodation, and the Sligerhun Hotel is now planning to stay open all winter, although
right.
they might be shut for a couple of weeks for renovations or whatever, but I believe they're now open all year.
Yeah.
And gradually, more and more places are staying open.
Yes.
And welcoming anybody who wants to come and see us.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Sally. It's been great to come up and see you again. As I mentioned in my introduction, you know, Sally's quite a way away from me, so we don't really get to see each other. So it's also a good opportunity doing something like this to have a catch-up as well.
And, it certainly is.
And
it
see
certainly
what
is.
You've got. And see what's new.
Keep looking.
Yeah. So, yeah, many, many thanks. I've really enjoyed chatting to you.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed hearing about Sally's journey here on Skye. I did go shopping after the interview. Oh, silly not to, when I live so far away from her and I don't go there very often, and she has such amazing stuff to buy. I will put a picture up in my show notes of her hand-dyed yarns that I bought. These are all destined to either be made into Dorset buttons or to go into Dorset button kits. That's it, the end of episode 7. Another month been and gone. If you are at Perth or Yarndale, do come and say hello. If not, do get in touch. Send me your feedback. Either drop me a line at tanya@tjfrog.co.uk, or you can find me at www.tjfrog.co.uk, or on Facebook and Instagram as TJ Frog Sky, Twitter as TJ Frog Bakes, and Ravelry as Little Frog. The music is by Ron Paintant and is licensed from Melody Loops and called One Frog for a Prince. Bye for now. Till next time.